in 1978, in the same year when Ilona Duczynska-Polani died, her central book was published in English, Workers in Arms, the Austrian Schutzbund and the Civil War of 1934. Eric Hobsbawm, the British Marxist historian, wrote a foreword. And in this foreword, he paid tribute to Duczynska's dedication to the cause of liberation of mankind and her unbroken, but never uncritical enthusiasm for socialism. With these words, I would also like to introduce the short biographical sketch of Ilona Duczynska-Polani, Karl Polanyi's wife. Born in 1897 in Maria Enzersdorf in Lower Austria, Duczynska came from a middle-class, aristocratic, but impoverished family. Her father, Alfred Ritter von Duczynski, was a senior officer at the Kaiser Ferdinand Nordbahn, a railway company. And, as she herself pointed out in a curriculum vitae in 1971, a private scholar, inventor, atheist, and aristocratic anarchist. Her mother, Helen Bekashi, came from a Hungarian land-owning family. In her autobiographical text, she emphasizes the rebellious nature of her father and of her family in general. And thus she created a genealogy of revolutionaries she was part of. Her father's family took part, for example, in the Polish uprisings in 1830-31, and her mother's family was involved in the Hungarian revolutionary uprisings of 1848-1849. But not only family tradition, also her extracurricular education, and especially her father's library, played a role. Thus, she had already read the classical socialist writings, as for example Bieber, The Women and Socialism, in her youth. She attributed her stubbornness, her socialism and rebelliousness to these readings, which were also evident in her school career. She reported that she, for example, repeatedly clashed with the teaching staff in a girls' lyceum in the small town of Baden near Vienna. For example, in religious education classes, when she had made clear that she was an atheist. She also had to leave the boarding school in Fulda, Germany, where she was, because there she was, as she said, the red one. And in 1914, in contrast to the nationalist spirit of the school, she was an opponent of the war. In 1915, she passed the matura, the final exam, in Baden as an external student. She was able to study in Zurich, Switzerland. Zurich was an important European center during the First World War, where not only opponents of the war, but also radical left-wing activists gathered. There, she came into contact with these radical left circles. In an interview with the Austrian historian Isabella Ackerl in the 1970s for the Austrian Broadcasting Corporation ORF, she reported on this and presented it as a revolutionary awakening experience. This is how she met Heinrich Lauer, who introduced her to the circle around Angelika Balabanova. In this revolutionary mood, in which many leftists in Zurich found themselves, and Duczynska with them, she decided to break off her studies and to return to Vienna and finally to Hungary. In this very informative and important interview with Isabella Acker, she told how she was to bring greetings from Zurich back to Vienna and met some social democrats, especially social democratic women, who were not only open to anti-war positions, but also had a critical attitude towards the empire, the Habsburg Empire, and advocated a new beginning in terms of a just socialist society. These included Therese Schlesinger, a very renowned social democratic leading figure in women's politics, together with her daughter Anna Frey, Käthe Bick, Merit Leichter, or Anna Strömer, who would later be one of the first and leading communist party members. But, as she then reported to Acker, the mood in Vienna was not radical enough for her, and she went on to Hungary. In Budapest, she joined the Galileo Student Club, which incidentally had also been co-founded by Karl Polanyi, whom she did not know at that time. Together with her later first husband, Tivadar Sugar, she founded her own small group, apart from Galilei, in order to become more active, as she called it. This group had clandestinely obtained a printing press, and they printed leaflets in her own room, agitating against the war and for a socialist revolution in the style of the Russian Revolution that happened, the revolutions that happened in 1917. Despite precautions, the police got on their trail and they were arrested and imprisoned in early 1918. In September 1918, Tuczynska was convicted in a treason trial. By the end of the war and the revolutionary upheavals in the territories of the monarchy just a few weeks later, she was freed. And in her freedom, she joined the Hungarian Communist Party. Her husband, Sugar, was the vice president of the Hungarian Soldiers' Councils and later also active in Béla Kun's cabinet during the Hungarian Soviet Republic. She herself held positions and was sent to Switzerland, where she worked as a journalist. From there, she went to Moscow for quite a short time and worked there. In 1920, she traveled back to Vienna again through illegal channels. These networks were very important for her, but the networks were also very evident in the Viennese period. For example, the women's rights activist and reform pedagogue Eugenia Schwarzwald arranged for her to live in a house where many exiled Hungarians lived, among them Karl Polanyi, whom she met there. Ilona Tuczynska-Polanyi's relationship with the Communist Party was strained during these years. She was finally expelled for violating party discipline in 1922. This was triggered by an article she published in the magazine Unser Weg, Our Path, edited by the German communist and dissident Paul Levy. In this article, she criticized the Hungarian Communist Party. She criticized especially the tendencies within the party that made internal democracy impossible. Later, she understood this criticism as a criticism of Stalinism at a time when it did not yet exist. It seems that after her expulsion from the party, she gave up political activities in the narrow sense, at least initially. She married Karl Polanyi, and her daughter Kari was born in Vienna in 1923. With her now second husband, however, she joined the Social Democratic Workers' Party. In Austrian history, 1927 is a year with the character of a Caesar, and it seems to have been the same for Ilona Tuczynska-Polanyi. After the bloody demonstrations against the acquittal of fascist members of the Heimwehr, who had murdered participants in the social democratic processions, and the resulting burning of the Palace of Justice, she wrote a leaflet calling for defensive action. In this domestic situation, she pleaded for a strong stand against fascism and also against police violence. Writing such leaflets contradicted the Social Democratic Party line, and expulsion proceedings were initiated. Another reason for these proceedings was her involvement in the so-called anti-fascist committees, committees where she was active together with communist comrades. The First Republic came to an end with the so-called self-exclusion of the parliament and the establishment of the Austro-fascist cooperative state in 1933. And then the Civil War in 1934. While Karl Polanyi emigrated to England, together with their daughter, Tuczynska remained in Vienna and was active in the resistance. Finally, in 1936, she turned her back on Vienna due to fears of being discovered and joined her family in England. There too, she continued to be active against fascism and National Socialism. So she worked, for example, for the Royal Air Force establishment and became an English citizen. When Carl Polanyi finally received a position at Columbia University in 1947, Tuczynska could not follow him due to difficulties entering the US because of her former Communist Party membership. She moved to Canada. In the last 20 years of her life, she commuted back and forth between Canada, Austria and Hungary. She continued to be committed to a plural socialism. She was in close contact with many Hungarian poets. For example, she translated many of Jozsef Lengyel's work into English, and she supported the dissident Miklós Harasti in his trial. Why is it relevant to remember Iluna Tuczynska-Polanyi? I think central things can be shown through her example, through the example of her life and her writings. First of all, she stands for many women who were active in the revolutionary upheavals in and after the First World War, who put their lives and freedom on the line, committed to a better world. They did so within and outside party memberships. Their legacy is often unknown today. Tuczynska also stands for a generation of young women who were politically engaged transnationally and across regime breaks and world wars throughout their lives and within the 20th century. But she's also interesting to rediscover because of her writings. Tuczynska is not only one of a few women who have dealt theoretically in their writings with violence and its relationship to politics. Her positions on the subjects are also complex and ambivalent. In her articles and in her self-writings and interviews, she evokes a thoroughly productive relationship to violence as a means of achieving political goals. On the other hand, though, she criticized violence when it came at the expense of plurality, democracy, and humanity, when violence is put first, and thus makes all the revolutionaries have fought for impossible. She emphasized the importance of plurality and of Eigensinn in her writings. I would say she was not only of interest to many young people in the 1970s, but is also very much worth rediscovering for us today. At the end of her life, Iluna Tuczynska-Polanyi sketched out a model of the socialist revolutionary in her books Workers in Arms, which I referred to at the beginning, which can also be read as a late model for her own revolutionary action. The revolutionary mediates between the sphere of power and the sphere of humanity. He is a true antibody in the body of bureaucracy, as she has put it. Central to this is the connection between the two spheres. And with the following, her words, I would like to conclude. Because power is inescapable, humanity is essential.